start things off, ladies, gents, boys, and guests, girls, not guests. Guests also, welcome to yet another episode. Told you before, say it again, change the name. It's no more the First X Minutes podcast. It's now the 90 Minutes Plus podcast. Rebranding season, sort of. And speaking of rebranding, I think African football is trying to reorient our minds about what the tag exactly it is. Because, boy, I cannot deal with all the drama, all the shocking results that have been happening all the way in Cote d'Ivoire, day 9 or 8 thereabouts. I'm not sure which day it is. It's easy to get lost in the counting of the days because drama, suspense, unexpected results, shocking results, and Super Eagles soaring over some elephants, and the Teranga Lions getting to a fantastic start. It has been a lot for us in Africa. My name is Rotimi Daramola. For more podcast content, you find it on Twitter, THE90MinutesPlus. That's THE90MINUSPLUS. I'm not alone. For the first time this year, second episode of 2024, I'm featuring two guests, seasoned football fans, I call them, on Twitter. And they know their stuff. They know their stuff. We just want to do a quick roundup of events for match day one and also talk about the big ones. Yeah, I almost said one. Then I remember there was a late kickoff, Egypt Ghana yesterday night, and boy, what a classic! But I'll let them introduce themselves. I'll ask them, guess your name, the country you're supporting at AFCON, and your predicted final.
Well, my name is Tosi. The country I'm supporting. Everyone will expect me to support Nigeria, no? Yeah, I support Nigeria. I think for me, the final I would like to see would be a final between Nigeria and Egypt.
Wow.
My dream final, I'll be honest, this tournament. Dream final for this tournament, Nigeria and Egypt. And it's not far-fetched. I just want to see a final between Osimhen and Salah. I think they're the two best players on the continent. But it looks like at this point in time, Egypt might not make it. So a final between Nigeria and Morocco will not hurt. So obviously, Nigeria is going to win. But I think a final between Nigeria and Morocco will be very interesting, especially given the undertones and how everybody is pointing out to Morocco and everyone wants them to win because they've been investing on football. Can you imagine the antithesis of that final? A country that is structured, that has done everything right for good football. I'm sorry if I'm swearing. They have absolutely no fucking clue what they're doing. No, they have no direction. It is just vibes and inshallah at its peak. Just imagine how crazy that is. I mean, who would not want that kind of final? I would.
That would be a final, a chaotic final. But ladies, gents, that's Tosin. I will be sharing their Twitter handles much later. I can't even remember them right now, but I'll be sharing them with you guys so you can follow them. Great guys, quality football content from them. I'm sure we have Tolu back now. Tolu, I just wanted to introduce yourself, your name, the country you're supporting this year's AFCON, and your predicted AFCON final.
Okay, my name is Tolu Lokoaluko. So I hope it doesn't make me unpatriotic, but I'm actually rooting for Algeria. And this is just because there is one Algerian player that has actually caught my eyes, Bennacer. I don't know if I pronounced that right. That is in Milan midfielder.
Yeah.
Man, I am so very, very much crazy about that guy. I still would say he's actually, at the moment, African's finest midfielder. So it's actually what I'm rooting for Algeria. So I think I'll just take a final Algerian, maybe the host. I still think the host will get their mojo. Yesterday was just one of them. I still think they'll get their mojo. And then the second round is beginning to really show how very much teams really want this competition. Yeah, I was actually surprised with the game plan of... I was surprised with the game plan of Nigeria yesterday. I think it was more of all passion and no tactics. No tactics, no technique. Just all passion and all of those things. So it's just great and man. So it's so very interesting. So I think I'm rooting for Algeria. I just want them to get to the final. And whosoever they get to the final, that's fine. Algeria is equal.
Thank you very much. So we have Tolu and we also have Tosin, and Tosin is rooting for Nigeria. Tolu begs to differ, and he doesn't want to do that at the expense of being seen as an outsider and being non-patriotic person, but he's going for Algeria. Algeria. Algeria has a kind of tune to Nigeria, so I get where Tolu is coming from. And Tosin is rooting for a chaotic, anticlimactic AFCON final between Morocco and Nigeria. Tolu, on the other hand, is rooting for an Algeria Cote d'Ivoire final. Let's start from round one now before we speak about the events that happened yesterday. I'll start with Tosin. Tosin, I saw your proposed theme of the round, and let's quickly talk about that because I'm sure you have been watching a lot more games than I have been seeing. Talk to me. Who was the best? By the way, I should say, Tosin on Twitter is Cosimo underscore Di Medici. I think I got that right. I think it's an Italian thing. Cosimo underscore DiMedici. And on his social media channels, he has been sharing daily content about the Total Energies African Cup of Nations as 2023. He's been reviewing, mostly previews though. Previewing each match day, previewing each group, previewing each fixtures, and I think that is a very, very worthy cause. And I think that makes him also the rightest person, one of the rightest person to talk to about events that happened in the first round of games. Tosin, most shocking result, most fascinating game, most exciting player. Do you have a list? Talk us through your ups and downs in the round one of games at the Africa Cup of Nations.
I think the most fascinating game, let me start from there, is going to be Tunisia versus Namibia for me. And that's because it was the most fascinating result. I didn't give the Namibians a chance, a team that has never won an AFCON game, 9 matches, no wins, just a couple of draws along the line. And for them to play with that much intent. And here's the thing. We saw the signs. I saw the signs in their qualification campaign. They literally qualified with a game to spare. They were in a three-team group that had Burundi and Cameroon. And the funny part was, they drew against Burundi in the first game. And they played Cameroon over 2 legs. And then they went to Douala, beat Cameroon in Douala, and then came back home. And we're almost going to beat Cameroon in the return leg before Cameroon scored a dubious late equalizer. And they had a share of the spoils and it was 4 points. But they took 4 points off Cameroon in 2 games. So, you know, I'd already sort of seen the signs, but I wasn't too sure what to make of it. And I felt, okay, desperate team. They needed the points. Maybe that was the reason why that game, the result went the way they did. And obviously, anyone who knows me knows the agenda I've had against Cameroon for a while. Especially since, Rigobert Song took charge. I sort of felt, okay, maybe because they were playing a team that is absolutely disorganized, has no direction when it comes to the coaching side of things. But I was wrong. It was about them. Because they then took on Tunisia. At no point in that game did Tunisia deserve to beat the Namibians. At no point. It was a masterclass in football at its best. And that was obviously a lesson in teams that have played consistent COSAFA Cups, and also glory to the PSL. You've seen players like Peter Shalulile, Dion Otto, Lloyd Kazapua, the goalkeeper. You had Anamub as well, who's played for AmaZulu before at some point in his career. Different guys who really, it was a perfect blend of PSL guys and guys who had played at other levels as well. Maybe at amateur and mid-level, some of them in the backwaters of Europe, as Nigerians would like to call it. So it was really good. And it exposed something, that it was not just about being able to play, but it was about quality coaching. And the interesting part was the coach, Colin Benjamin. He was the captain of the national team before. The last time they came to the Africa Cup of Nations, the second to the last time they came to the Africa Cup of Nations in 2008. He was not just a captain. He played all the games where they got a point from 3 matches. And, you know, he seemed to have learned from that. He was assistant from 2018 to 2022. So he was assistant the last time they came to the AFCON. So he was taking notes and he was looking at how to unnest the team and, you know, get the team to the best possible version of themselves. And he seems to have found it. Aprocious Petros, who played at the base of the midfield, was absolutely phenomenal. He was scheming. That man was dealing like he was on a poker table in that game. So I think for me, that was the best game for me in terms of tactically what to expect. Tunisia were abject. Jalel Kadri finally has to learn that satanism does not always work. You know, for me, so in terms of tactical point of view, I thought that was the best game. But in terms of excitement and in terms of racing action, I think there are two games you got to put high up there. Egypt versus Mozambique, that second game, and also Egypt versus Ghana, because it was absolute chaos. Special mention must also go to Equatorial Guinea versus Guinea-Bissau as well, because it was a game I really loved to see. Obviously, the drabest match of the tournament between Burkina Faso and Mauritania. It was an eyesore. It was an embarrassment. It was so embarrassing. Even my grandmama called it embarrassing. So annoying. No one, even the most aficionado of football, would not even find that affectionate or would want to affiliate with football after seeing that game. The two teams struggled to put together a good spell of football. You know, most of the times I've had to watch the games again just to sort of get a second opinion and see them again from a different perspective. And I must say to you, it was just, at first I thought it was a good game, and then on a second watch, oh my God, what a disgrace. It was horrible to see. And I sort of understand when people say, okay, maybe it was polar opposite between what we saw in that game and what we saw in the Tunisia versus Namibia game. And that's quite intriguing, because 15 games into the AFCON, only three games have ended 1-0. We're yet to have a goalless draw. It's just fascinating to me, because I can't believe it. So I think in terms of end-to-end action, it's been that game, those games I mentioned, those three games, two of them involving Egypt. Obviously, I want to give a special mention, a special shout-out to the collapse that Ghana endured against Cabo Verde as well. It gives me so much joy to say it, when Ghana collapsed. I didn't want to hold any animosity towards them before, but they made it that way because they, for some reason, they want to see Nigeria fall. And my God would not allow that. So while they continue to wish us bad, that is what happened to them. But, you know, that aside, that's on a lighter note. But on a serious side, I sort of think the Egypt games, Rui Vitorious tried to play expansive football. They've sort of had to pay for it, because as much as they'll score, they'll also concede. And I think that's what is missing for them. I'm eager to see what they do against Cabo Verde in their final group game, but also Equatorial Guinea. Very exciting side. Direct, fast. If they get an opportunity, they'll punish you. So, you know, you've got these teams that are playing fast and direct football, well-coached teams. So I think for me, that's the most exciting team that I've seen. In terms of the most exciting player, obviously got to go Emilio Insue. People might talk about, hey, is it because he scored a hat-trick? No, that's not the reason. If you watch Nigeria versus Equatorial Guinea, it was a thorn in the flesh of our defenders. It caused us problems, so much so people were dragging our defenders and saying, a guy that has played majority of his career as a guy back. But do they know every time he plays for the Equatorial Guinean national team, he plays as a centre forward? So it's not something that he's doing for the first time. He's done it a lot of times. He's one of those guys that can play in many positions. He reminds me of a former Equatorial Guinean legend as well. His name, José Javier Balboa. So you can imagine, they've got players like this who've done this in times past. It's no coincidence. He was a product of Real Madrid Academy as well. So I'm not surprised at the fact that he also eventually became the first man to score a hat-trick since 2008. He's excited me. Gary Rodriguez has been very exciting for me as well. I've also been excited to a degree by Omar Mamouche as well. The young Egyptian player, Emem Aşoğlu, has been exciting to a degree as well. And of course, who will forget Mohamed Kudus? But one man who's also excited me, Bagdad Bounedjah, who scored what was potentially the goal of the tournament, and it was cancelled for offside in Algeria's game against Angola as well. So many entertaining players, so many exciting players. Those are just a few of the guys that have caught my eye so far in the tournament. And what about Mabululu, the Angolan striker, who scored and tried to copy Bafétimbi Gomis as well? came on and was just telling them, hook it to my chest, hook it to my chest. And somehow they got a penalty from hooking it to his chest as well. So they've been quite the interesting guys in this tournament. And what about Lamine Camara? Who would forget? Senegal's golden boy. But, you know, with the golden touch as well. A lot of interesting players. Pat Gueye as well. Oh my God. You can go on and on about guys who have been exciting. What about Ademola Lookman, who's played two beautiful games? And boy, would it be wrong if I forget Mr. Lulu himself? Or Laulua, you know, in these two games for Nigeria's Super Eagles, he's been absolutely peerless to see as well.
The first question I would ask, and that's for the audience, or though if you're listening to this episode of the podcast, I hope you've been keeping up. I was keeping up. I was trying to keep up because in my head I was wondering, how is it that nobody knows this much about African football? But then again, that's why I brought him on. Only the best on this podcast. And we have to think through everything that Tosin just said right now. And you think of it and you said, no wonder there's a lot of drama. No wonder there's a lot of shocking results. When you consider Algeria held by Angola, when you consider Egypt's first game, even their second game, how they had to scramble back from goals down against Ghana to salvage a draw despite losing Mohamed Salah. And there's just too much written in the stars that you begin to wonder, until the second round of games are played, we may not necessarily know who is going to qualify, who is not going to qualify. Before I bring Tolu on, Tosin, let's quickly talk about yesterday's games. I'll come to you in a minute, Tolu. Let's quickly talk about yesterday's games. The two classics, or should I say, one is more classical than the other. Egypt-Ghana. Ghana putting blood, sweat and tears on the pitch, and the Egyptians equally making same sacrifice. Crazy game by all means. What is wrong with Ghana? What is wrong with Ghana? And second question, question 1A, what is wrong with Ghana? Question 1B, you look at the performance of the North African sides over the competition so far. Only Morocco have shown. Algeria draw, Egypt draw, Algeria, okay, yeah, draw. Tunisia lost to Namibia, yes. Has the rest of Africa decoded the North African style? So, two questions. One, what is wrong with Ghana? Has the rest of Africa decoded North African football? Tosin.
Yeah, so let me start with the first question. With Ghana, I can't possibly explain. And here is the reason. You've got a raft of coaches. They got the former coach Milivan Rajevac came back on the road to the 2022 World Cup. He got fired. They brought in Otto Addo as well. Otto Addo came in. Managed to do that, what he did against Nigeria, and they qualified for the 2022 World Cup. And then you have the small matter, now you have the small matter of Chris Hughting as well. So that's three good managers, you would say. And they've not been able to figure out what the problem is. But in football, Siki happened before that as well. But the Ghana has been gradual. Now, let's do a bit of context. Ghana, in the 80s, the last time they won the AFCON was back in the 80s. It's been 41 years since they last won the Africa Cup of Nations thereabout as well, going to 42 years now. Now they had that golden generation. They had a bit of a renaissance in the 90s with Abedi Pele Ayew as well, who did things to them, 1992 final. But then they fell off again. And then in the early 2000s, they seemed to, you know, gather their thoughts again. 2000, Africa Cup of Nations was a launch pad for that. Samuel Osei-Kufuor, Stephen Appiah, and then the emergence of Michael Essien, the likes of Anthony Annan, those young players, John Mensah as well, who came in and sort of solidified Ghana once again, went to the World Cup for the first time ever, eliminating South Africa, did well at the AFCON in that tournament as well. Didn't do well at the AFCON in that tournament, came into their own at the AFCON in 2008, got to the semi-final, 2010, got to the final, 2012 got to the semi-final, 2013 semi-final, 2015 final, 2017 semi-final. I just counted six straight tournaments where Ghana made the semi-finals of the Africa Cup of Nations. The problem is, when you have a golden generation of players and there is no intentionality towards building on that generation, you will have issues like this. And I think that's what the president Koto Kraku is trying to work on now, to make sure that the pipeline of talent that goes from under 17 to under 20 continues to flow. Now, let me tell you why they managed to do what they did for six consecutive tournaments. You remember that team in 2009 that went all the way to lift the under 20 FIFA World Cup? Remember that a core of that team went on to the AFCON in 2010. And because they were a young set of guys from 2010, they were able to keep that momentum for 7 years, which is obviously respectable because by that time, most of the guys will be coming into their prime. But the problem is, most of those guys, probably they'll have become older. Not all of them would have made it to professional level. They'll also have mixed with guys who have come from far back as 2006. Say someone like Asamoah Gyan, who's been part of the team, who was part of the team for more than 14 years. And so by the time 2019 comes around, the decline begins to set in. Asamoah Gyan is older, edging closer to retirement. Andre Didier-Ayew is now an elder statesman. He's 30, going on the wrong side of 30 as well. Attending his 7th Africa Cup of Nations as well. And then you looking at a scenario where my players are getting older and there are no replacements, particularly for these young players who are coming into the team as well. So you then begin to look at a scenario whereby let's just get as much talent as we can. And then they begin to scamper the likes of Gideon Mensah, the likes of John Pansil, who have gone abroad and developed. It's somewhat something similar to Nigeria. But the problem is you can't probably get the right mix together in terms of coaching and technically as well. So you come, just put all those guys together. There's no intentionality to make sure they blend. And because the tournaments are coming thick and fast, the only thing you can do is just call these guys up together. They come together, train for a few times. They don't have so much time to prepare for the tournament. You look at 2019 AFCON, they had barely 2 weeks to prepare for that tournament. Got bounced in the round of 16 on penalties. He got to the 2021 Africa Cup of Nations, where, of course, he held in 2022, where there was also such a small time. COVID happened, so you don't have as much time to prepare the team. But the individual brilliance of players like Thomas Partey get you over the line. You qualify for the tournament. You get to the main tournament proper because there's not so much time to blend. Milovan Rajevac is the coach. He's just come back. He's got a short time to prepare the team. They get bounced in the first round, lose to Comoros as well. And so much time. The team, you know, pressing the panic button. Oh, Rajevac can lead us forward. Fire him, bringing Otto Addo. Otto Addo comes in as well. It's got a short time. Somehow works as magic. They get lucky. Also because Nigeria lacks a good coach. If Nigeria had got a good coach, Ghana would have been embarrassed, I can guarantee you. God. Not the man that did, and they were shouting, "Hey, Bubo, shout out your blessings." And you know, that if that was not the case, they got lucky, went to the World Cup. You saw them at the World Cup. They were not particularly convincing. They had an opportunity to qualify. And guess what they did? They bottled it. Ghosts of years past come back to haunt them at the World Cup. And then let's talk about the road to this 2023 Africa Cup of Nations. People seem to forget it. But Ghana were drawn in a group that had Madagascar, Central African Republic in that same group, and they struggled to qualify. And Angola, they waited until the last day to seal qualification for the Africa Cup of Nations. So they didn't get here easily. It took brilliance, the individual brilliance once again of Antoine Semenyo to make sure that they came to this AFCON. He did it in the last two games, scoring late goals to keep them alive and make sure they get to Cote d'Ivoire. So you've seen this team, they're not looking so good. So Chris Hughton, he's got a short period of time once again. He's got barely 10 days to prepare them for this AFCON. And now they've come to this AFCON, he's decided we're going to play an attacking style of play. They're trying to play an attacking style of play, but what it means is you've not got strong defense. Alexander Djiku and Mohamed Salisu, who's just moved from Southampton to AS Monaco, and who's also just recovering from injury, they got to play together once again. The only time these guys get to play together is when they come on international duty as well. They're playing different styles. You've got Gideon Mensah, left back, who's not particularly a great left back. He's better as a left wing back. You've got Dennis Odoi, who is much older and advanced in years. And now he's come and put a midfield pairing of Majid Ashimeru and Abdel Samid Salis, who have not played together a lot of games. And so you were trying to learn and adapt on the fly. So they've not got enough time. So you've got a team that's been hastily put together. Guys don't know their roles. Cats are still trying to figure out each other's style of play. So individual brilliance like that of Mohamed Kudus will bail you out like it did yesterday against Egypt as well. So I think that for me, that obviously sort of lends a bit of an issue. Not enough time. There's no cohesion. Inaki Williams is not, Chris Hughton is not decided on who will be centre forward just yet. Antoine Semenyo's, we know is going to be the left winger or the right winger, depending on the situation that they find themselves in. Jordan Ayew is going to start, but we know Jordan Ayew is not Jordan Ayew. It's not what he used to be, you know, when he was much younger. So you got an older squad. You got players who have not yet gotten themselves together. So you can't particularly place it in terms of this. The talent is there, but you can't particularly, you can't say the coaching is not there. They've got Chris Hughton. So you can't particularly place what the problem is as far as the Black Stars are concerned. That's from the Ghanaian side of things. I think for me, though, if they stick with Chris Hughton, it might be a long and arduous road, but I think it will bear fruit and yield dividends. They need to be patient with him. See, maybe they can stick with him for one more tournament. He showed a lot of faith in the local players, called 15 of them to the professional squad as well. So maybe that's one thing they want to stick with and be patient about and just trust the process with Chris Hughton. Speaking of the North African teams...
Tosi, before you move on, I'm going to let you catch your breath before we go back to the rest of Africa catching up with North Africa. I just wanted to catch your breath. If you don't speak again, I think you've said a lot in terms of, especially how deep you go when it comes to breaking down what is happening. We have a late entrant, or guest, should I say, joining the chat from Twitter. Oh, my Twitter family, let me put it that way. Omoawe is here, we call him Omoawe. I'll let him introduce himself in a minute. But before he does that, Tolu, let me quickly talk to Tolu. Tolu, you watched Nigeria's game against the host yesterday. We won 1-0. There were a lot of things, good things. We now have 4 points. Our chances of qualifying is higher or better now, let me put it that way. From your perspective, what are the little things that still remain for Nigeria Super Eagles to do for them to go from being not just qualifiers out of the group, but to be able to go all the way to the final and probably win it?
Thank you so very much. For the game yesterday, I actually watched it and I would say I'm still not impressed with the Super Eagles. As much as I want them to fly, I hope they fly. They still haven't been able to put in, say, a very, 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 very impressive performance. You still find out that this Super Eagles have actually assembled high-quality players, but are struggling to put together 3 or 4 passes. It's always quick to say, oh, boom, boom, boom. Either they lose the ball or just find the chance to just pop it into the opponent's half. I really don't know, but I think one major thing would actually say, oh, fine, maybe we'll just stick to it, was the new formation of having three at the back. Oh, fine, it can actually be helpful. Have more bodies in the middle, and then, fine, just have 1 or 2 persons supporting Osimhen. But I am not so sure. I think we'll still have to draw back to probably getting good technicalities, being able to put the ball down, pass when you should pass, make runs, give accurate. We watch these things day in, day out in most of Europe elite leagues. It's not just the ability to take the ball, probably use your strength or want to run, dribble all of the players on. No, at times, just doing the simple thing, the simple way. Pass, make room, get the ball, and then make the running. So it's a thing of them being able to say, okay, they will still be able to cajole those passes together. And then availability, give space, make room to get the ball. And yeah, there were a few instances because of the game yesterday where we had players clashing. I think it was just all down to brother. Yes, I would say, yeah, better than the first game they had. At least the passion was evident yesterday. There were players who were ready to fight for the jersey. Who, yes, they were ready to give it all, give blood to be able to come up. Yeah, it was, yeah, not so. It, I would say it was a better showing than the previous game, but I would actually say there's still so much room for improvement. Down to our ball passing, the player being able to read the game, make space, get the ball, do the simple things the simple way. And all of those things. I, for once in the employment of the coach, I've not been impressed. At some point, I just said, oh, fine. Even if you give a very bad craftsman good tools to work with, trust me, nah, it wouldn't produce something very, very subliminal. It's still going to be a case of you just try to patch it. You can't give what you don't have. I really don't trust this group. So maybe I'll not place so much on us just to watch and see. Let me support my country and all those things. But I would not be expecting so much. And it's very, very evident. Struggling to make connecting passes, make room and all of the things and all of the things. So that's just the example for me. I just think if they would just adhere to keep the simple things simple, and then, of course, fix their passing game and all of the things, just then maybe.
Thank you for that, Tolu. When Tosi was speaking earlier, he mentioned Namibia, and I went to check the numbers, and I realized that the Algeria-Angola game was the one that had the most corners. 16 corners. Algeria took 14 of those, by the way. That's the most we've recorded in the tournament so far. And the second highest has to be the one between Tunisia and Namibia, where Tunisia played 8, Namibia played 7 corners, a total of 15. And in just the yesterday game we're talking about, Tolu just finished dissecting right now, we had 11 corner kicks between Ivory Coast and Nigeria. The Ivorians took 5 and the Nigerians took 6. I mentioned earlier that we had a late entrant. This is where we welcome you to the show. But to start with, you have to tell us your name. You have to tell us the country you are supporting, the Africa Cup of Nations. And you also have to tell us your predicted final for the AFCON 23. Omawe, over to you.
Good afternoon, Papi. It's an honor to be on your podcast. I think why am I here? For the love of football. Good afternoon to our listeners. My name is Awe Adedeji, popularly called Omawe, and I have been an avid football follower from, I wouldn't say from my mother's womb, but. Well, I love football. I love everything football. I used to play. I don't play anymore. Now I just sit back on my chair and drink pure water and criticize people that are playing the game for the love of it. I've been following AFCON for a while. I think I started watching AFCON way back in secondary school.
At some before point, we use to before that. We use that to guess your age.
Yes, I think way back in secondary school, not really. I don't want to go deep into it, but my predicted final, I'll say my final four, as things are shaping up, I won't say my predicted final. My final four should be Algeria, Senegal, Nigeria, and one of these surprise packages from the beginning, like Mozambique. I think it wasn't Mozambique that beat
Namibia. That beat Tunisia.
Tunisia, yeah, Namibia, thank you. Four of those people. Those are my semi-finalists. I don't know. Football can be funny anyway. But I'm going to say my biggest one would be Morocco and Senegal, because they have a proper team and they know what they are doing in tournament so far. So you never can tell. It's a spread of games, and football is a very, very close sport. Case in point, Mo Salah getting injured last night, and when he got injured, Kudus took the game by the neck and said, okay, the king is out of the game, let the upcoming prince of Africa let him do the business. So these are the things that you love to see in football. Thank you very much, Papi. And thanks for having me.
Thank you, Omawe. Omawe is on Twitter. I will share his Twitter handle in a minute. That's what we do at this. That's a little bit we can do. We help to spread the word where the good guys are when it comes to football. Tosin's back, and I'm expecting Tolu to also join us shortly. Omawe, before I bring on Tosin, let's quickly talk about round one in the Africa Cup of Nations. I've said it. I've been saying it before. I said, we don't know what kind of edition this is, because boy, it has been feisty, it has been unpredictable, it has been shocking, we never saw it coming. For you, how would you summarize everything that happened in round one? Tunisia getting beaten, Algeria drawing, only Senegal Morocco and Cote d'Ivoire. Like, I can't say we're like the big top teams, let me put it that way, that really registered wins, and there were no surprises. Okay, let's say maybe Mali. But Egypt held by Mozambique, Nigeria held by Equatorial Guinea, Ghana getting slapped, not necessarily slapped, I'm just exaggerated that, getting beaten by Cape Verde, Algeria, Angola being held to a draw. How would you summarize that? Does that give you a different perspective about the direction that African football is going to, as what you have seen on the pitch, giving you more hope that, look, football is going to get better in a short while when it comes to football on the continent, Omori?
All right, thank you very much, Rafi. I think we had this discussion late into the midnight yesterday after the match while we were watching Ghana, Egypt, and we had the discussion. We were trying to understand what the blueprint for African football is. Is it pace? Is it power? Is it technicality? What exactly is a blueprint for African football? I kid you not, we West Africans, I'm sorry to say, we don't have like a proper blueprint for African football yet. All we know is we have talent. I want to make sure that those talents are put together in a team and expected to do the business. There's not so much of tactical nous in it. So which takes me into the results that we've seen so far. The results we've seen so far at this AFCON, I kid you not, Papi, it's been shocking, but it's just to show you that there has been improvements all around in the African game, all across board in Africa. The big boys that you expected to steamroll the smaller nations are telling you that we can put together 22 teams, 22 players, or 25, 27 players that can come and do the business. And the results have been very, 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 very intriguing to look at. I'm looking at some of the results here. Cape Verde 1 was very, very exciting. Beating Ghana 2-1. What was it called? Angola. Angola a while back were not so doing badly in African football, but being able to hold Algeria, or might say Algeria, so sure, that speaks volume of where they've come so far. And that's the kind of results that you look at and be like, oh, okay, football is going somewhere. Equatorial Guinea holding Nigeria as a 1-1 draw 2 was not something anybody expected, but these are the things. Football cannot be predicted. Football on paper is easy to predict who is going to win, who is going to lose. But at the end of the day, once that whistle blows and the Warriors are on the pitch of play, you don't know what to expect. So far, so good. It's been an impressive first round, and we can't wait for how the rest of the game turn out today. But there's this feeling I have that there will be some surprises, some big boys might fall out when the Chiefs are down. Don't be surprised if the host nation goes out in the first round. Thank you very much, Pat.
I won't be surprised. I'm aware as predicted, or as suggestively predicted, that I shouldn't be surprised, I shouldn't be shook or shocked if Ivory Coast is knocked out of the group stage. Before I talk to Tosi, let me quickly talk to Tolu. By the way, you can find Omawe on Twitter at Deji Israel, at Deji Israel, DEJIISREAL. Great guy, great guy. His greatness even goes race to power too when he's chatting or fighting or arguing with his comrade, Degas Scott. But great guy on my way. Let me quickly talk to Tolu. Tolu, did you mention pace, you mentioned power, you mentioned technicality in round one. Which one do you think has been, how would you rank the three in terms of what you have seen? Which one would you say teams are relying upon the most? Which one would you say is the second one the teams are relying upon the most? Which one would you say is the third one the teams are relying upon the most? You mentioned pace, you mentioned power, you mentioned technicality. Tolu, those three, how would you rank them in terms of what you have seen in round one at the Africa Cup of Nations?
So the funny thing is, some of the teams who have actually shown this glimpse of technicality, they don't have those star players. One of them is Cape Verde. So I've actually followed this team. Like, I followed them from the qualification phase. They want to play football. Oh, it's a case wherein it's trying to win us, but we want to play football. Whoever scores the most would win. They took the game to Ghana. I for one felt like, oh, the result would have been actually been very, very unfair if they had lost it. They took the game to Ghana. And then most of this, why I would say it's been a case of the few teams who have actually played with technicality have actually, yes, they've actually done well. They've actually put up a good, they've actually shown how much football has actually evolved in Ghana. Take for instance, Cape Verde, even Namibia, they were not intimidated by names. They were not intimidated. No, we want to play you. And then you now realize that as much of these Northern African teams want to bring up their game, I think their game is now revolving mostly around pace. Oh, fine, you have the ball. We want to play that pace football. We want to, because of course, most of the African teams want to use power. They want to use pace to probably make them chase second balls and probably get tired quickly. And then they can actually start capitalizing. But teams are actually finding them out. No, we would not just keep chasing the ball. You want to run, we would play our own game. That's actually why I feel most of these are Northern teams actually struggling with the first round. But I would say it's too early to draw a call. But it's been a case wherein you've actually seen the ones who've actually really wanted to put the ball down and play this football, play pass games. They've actually excelled. They've not done solely bad. So take for instance, I for one also enjoyed the game between Mali and South Africa. Quite impressed. I'm always impressed when I watch South African play. They are one I would actually say fine. They would always want to give the home-based footballer a chance. And you would see their game so connect when they are making those passes. But I think they've actually struggled with more of a ball-winning midfielders. In case that most times when they chase the balls, only maybe when it goes out of place or maybe when there's a foul, all of those things, that's when they've not done well as regards ball-winning. But they've actually won. Yeah, their game with Mali was actually quite good. So I think so far we've seen more of countries who wanted to use power. The West, this Western part of Africa, it's always more power, we're strong and all of those things. No, football has actually evolved beyond that. And then we had most of the Northern countries to come with us. And then very few countries playing to pace. I, for one, was not surprised when Nigeria drew Equatorial Guinea, because it was a case where you saw that they wanted to play football. As much as we were stronger, we wanted to bully, but they wanted to play that football. No, we were not going to play that off-ball. We were going to start ball playing from the back, try to balance from the midfield, and see how we can actually penetrate. And that was actually how they got their first goal. It wasn't just a cross and look for somebody to know that, not the defense. So I think African football is actually still evolving around these things. But the teams who have actually been able to hold on to that technicality, I just would want to imagine the Cape Verde having a very, very, quality players. I think their star man is this guy, Bebe, who plays in La Liga, Rayo Vallecano. I think he's been their star man. And you see that other members actually understand the game of football, and they're actually playing to him. Another thing, I think if Oluwa mentioned when he actually dissected Ghanaian football, I, for one, would say rotation has been the major problem of this Ghanaian side. And then due to the fact that some of their big names too, of course, most teams, some of their big names are unavailable. Suleimana, I think the guy plays Southampton, then Thomas Partey, then there's another one in Leicester. I think they have quite a number, because as at the time they reduced their 27-man list, I think most of the ones they dropped were just based on the fact that they were injured. So they have to drop. So I think, Chris Orton has actually been doing lots of rotations. And I don't know. Their form recently, even all through the qualifier, they topped their group. I think they scored 9 goals, considered the least in their group. They topped. I think they had 12 points. They didn't lose any. I think they won 3, drew 3, and all of those things. Well, their form, before the AFCON games, they were losing their friendlies. And also, I think it's just more down to rotation. Player not sure of if they're going to start the next game and all those things. And I think it's just down to the fact that Chris Orton is actually coming with that coach mentality. Let's see if rotation can. Oh, this is African football. You just have to find your 11, find the formation that works to them and stick to them. If one is injured, it's always easy to be able to replace and then see how the team punts and actually gets to merge together. Hmm. But so far, we've actually seen more of power than any other things. Those teams that really want to play good football, they've been doing remarkably well. Thank you, Papi.
Thank you so much, Tony. Just before I go to Totting, kindly confirm your Twitter account. I've not seen a tweet there in a long while. Is it still the one?
Yes. We can go ahead. I would have to. I got hacked, but I was able to get the account back.
Get it back. Great. All right. All right. So you can catch Tolu on Twitter, Aluxtia. Yes, the world famous Aluxtia. Aluxtia. Just going to drop a tweet now and mentioning how fantastic we're having Friday football fun. This is fun. This is great. We might just make this a tradition on the brand. Not sure, depending on how easily we can get guests. Let me go back to Tosin. Tosin, let's do a review for round one with an eye on round two. We have a cracker coming up shortly, very shortly. I think it's later today. Senegal, Cameroon, Teranga Lions, Indomitable Lions, West African powerhouses when it comes to football. Tosi, I don't want to say what's your prediction because that would be too short. Take us through this game. What's going through your mind as a fan who has been watching football for a while now? What are you expecting from the reigning champions of the continent and a certain side that is having troubles with his goalkeeper resuming late into the tournament? Tosi.
Yeah, so it's quite an interesting fixture. The turns to it, Senegal winning their first AFCON in Cameroon after being denied by Cameroon in 2002, 22 years ago, at the African Nations. So it's interesting as to the undertones that are coming to this game. This is the fifth meeting of the Africa Cup of Nations between both sides. Senegal won the first one 2-0 in 1992. Since then, they've not been able to lay a glove on the Cameroonians. Lost some penalties in two of the previous three meetings. So, in fact, in the last three meetings, they've lost some penalties against this opponent. So it's an opponent they found very difficult to beat. But I think today is going to be Senegal. And here's why. Cameroon in trouble. They're in serious trouble. Let's leave Andrew on one side. They're in serious trouble now. Nah. I mean, let's talk about it. There's no Vincent Aboubakar. I mean, apart from Frank Zambo, Akiza in midfield, who can you name in the Cameroon in midfield? The defense is trash. Yes, I said it. I mean, come on now. If Christopher Wu does not play, they're in trouble. You're just trying to look at the make of the team. The talent is not what we used to when it comes to the Cameroonian national team. And don't get me started on the coaching. Look, let's say that as it is, Samuel Etoufis is not what he is as an administrator, what he was as a player. They're two different personalities. Phenomenal player, great player. For some people, the greatest African footballer to ever play. Not for me, though. But for some people, the greatest African footballer ever. This guy is in contention for the worst African administrator ever in football. Since he came into the job, Cameroon have regressed. His first horrible decision was to fire Tony Conseil from the national team job because he didn't win the Africa Cup of Nations on own soil. And guess who's brought in? His former teammate, Rigobert Song. And what he's also done is quite interesting. So let's give a bit of context to it. Senegal hired Aliou Cissé after they crashed out of the group stages of the AFCON in 2015. They give him a French assistant, Régis Bogard. Régis Bogard has been with him for the past 9 years and he's helped him in curating and crafting the Senegalese team. Let's also note, and mind you as well, that Senegal in the B2 also sort of get to the stage in which they've overhauled the way football has worked for them. They've allowed Cissé to build this squad and mold it in his own image with the assistance of Bogard. They've had to deal with the outbreaks the World Cup outbreaks. They've also been fortunate to have a scenario whereby Generation Fou and Diamba have produced professional players that have gone on to represent the national team eventually because they go through Metz, and most of them, when they go through Metz, either they go through Metz or they go through Le Havre or they go through a certain French second division side. So it's not hard to have a bit of identity to the team because most of them have gone by the same route. You look at Senegal, they've been fortunate with the quality of guys they've had from the diaspora. You look at places like Abdou Diallo, you look at like Bruno Sarr, you got Kalidou Koulibaly. These are guys who at under 20 level play for the French national team, under 17 level play for the French national team. You've got guys who've won tournaments at youth level with this national team. And then there's Cameroon, who are having to call a guy who played football, who plays football in the third tier of English football.
He spoke about a few problems that to each his own when it comes to this football thing. We have challenges, we have circumstances, we have problems, we have issues. Some people have complained about the pitch. Some people, some of the journalists have complained about the heat. Amawe, remember a few days back when we were talking about Nigeria in the grand scheme of things, Nigerian football, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Now, we are currently enjoying a festival of football. However, should a festival of football cover a multitude of sins or atrocities in the sense that should a team's success, how do I put it? What's the way I want to craft this question now? Some Nigerians are saying, look, we don't want Nigeria to succeed at AFCON because we want the Federation to see that there is a problem. If they succeed, then everybody gets carried away with the celebrations and we forget to solve the problem. For you, are you on that boat or are you on the team, look, let's succeed, let's add one more trophy, let everybody say Nigeria is winning, but deep down, there are still issues that we need to contend with, Amawe?
You asked a very, very big question and you answered it yourself. So the truth of the matter is we all want the best for Nigerian football. What we are getting is not value for money. Excuse me. We're a nation rich in abundance of footballers. As Solu was talking about the Cameroonian thing, I realized something. I think it's an endemic African problem. There is nothing that should make Onana be starting in today's match. Sorry, I digressed. If it's not total lack of disrespect for African football, we are calling for more respect for African players, calling for respect for African football. Yeah, it might be funny, but Papi, it's the truth. Onana is my club goalkeeper, but he shouldn't be doing that. Meaning he was called up, off you go on a plane. Not like the team that you are leaving, they don't have a replacement. As for Onana, that was quite disrespectful. And it's probably he was there saying, why did he hire a private plane? Yeah, all over for Ojo Noni. Because he had money to hire a private plane so he can rush down to make the game. But in worst case, he was jet lagged. If they now play short for him and he now concede, thank God he didn't even play. If he had played, they would have even sweat for him more since Cameroon drew that game, that first game. And is it true or lost? That first game. Now, to Nigerian football. We all want Nigerians to be successful. But we are not getting value. If Pesaro is successful, every other thing would not matter again. He has gone and he has done the business. What was the business he did? He won the African Cup of Nations. Then the next thing is, we are not seeing the problems with Africa or Nigerian football anymore. We are not seeing the lack of grassroots development of Nigerian football. We are not seeing the lack of pattern in Nigerian football. We are not seeing the gross and IDK in Nigerian football. We need to shed more light on the safety of Nigerian footballers, even on the nation itself. There are many, many things that are wrong with Nigerian football presently, but we cannot just start on this field because if we start, it won't finish. We tried it on the football assembly and it ended up being one of the longest pieces that I've ever participated in.
Tosi Holmes, if you can hear me. Let's talk about your projection for the rest of the tournament based on what you have seen from the first round. Who do you think was making it out of the group? Who do you think is going home early? Fixtures you're looking forward to in the round of 16?
Yeah, so quickly, I have two teams. I've already said it. I think Ghana and Cameroon will go up in the group stages. I know a lot of people don't like that, but I mean, it is what it is. I'm not sure what to expect from these two teams. I think they're in a rebuild and they're trying to get their acts together. So maybe it's come too early for them. I think they'll go home early, those two teams. I also think, and now this is not something I'm set in stone on yet. I have serious concerns for Egypt. Serious concerns because I think even if they get out of the group, they might get bounced out early because Salah is no longer there. And also because of the approach Rui Vitória is trying to establish. Now, mind you, they scored 33 goals in 14 games coming into this tournament. They sailed through the qualification group. And also, not just that, they scored 4 goals in this tournament, but they've also conceded 4 goals as well. You look at some of the goals, it's come down to mistakes and individual brilliance on the part of the opponents as well. So I think for me, those three teams are teams I'm really concerned about. I am most excited by, wait for it, the DRC. I think the Democratic Republic of Congo are one team that everyone are not talking about yet, because, you know, people are thinking, it's the DRC. These names don't move the needle. But people need to remember, it's teams that win a tournament. And I think they got a bunch of good guys. These are guys who won, who played for the French under 17 team, under 20 team, under 21 team, under 23 team at different phases of their lives. Guys who played for the Belgian under 21 teams as well. I think the quality is there. Most of these guys are playing at top European clubs relatively. That's one team I'm watching out for. One game I think will fascinate everyone in the round of 16 is the game between Ivory Coast and Guinea. Ivory Coast and Guinea, because I think it will be 2A versus 2C. I think Cote d'Ivoire will finish second in the group, in our group. I think Guinea will finish second in group C. If both teams meet, I'm keen to see that fixture, simply because I just think that Cote d'Ivoire have to be on notice. They've not convinced me in this tournament. They relied on individual brilliance for the first game. I don't know how long that will take them.
I think if Morocco win their group, Group F, which I think they will ultimately, I'm also keen to see what it would look like, because they will have to face one of South Africa, Mali or Tunisia, who will finish second in that group. People might be wondering, you didn't mention Namibia. Yeah, that's because I think Namibia will either finish first or third. That's the thing about them. There's no in-between to the Namibians. They've shown it that they're either going to win this group outright, but they're going to finish as one of the best third place sides. The game against South Africa will be very important. So I think it will be a three-way battle for who will finish second. I think it's one of those three teams that will finish second if Namibia win the group that or finish third, as I think. And so whoever finishes second there will be an interesting matchup for Morocco. South Africa will be a very interesting matchup for them, because South Africa have a way of having the number of North African teams. They beat Egypt on home soil in 2019. You go all the way back to 2013 when they met Morocco. They beat Morocco as well in that tournament. So they've got the number of this North African teams, and they seem to be able to dig deep to find a way to make sure that they get something in games against them. I don't know why. I don't know how. Maybe it's because maybe it's been a case of what happened under Peter Mosimane, but they're unbeaten. I think they beat Morocco, or they drew against them in 2013, but I knew they didn't lose. So they sort of have a way. They've beaten Tunisia before. Did that in 1996 on route to winning the trophy as well. So I think that's interesting for me. So I'm looking at those undertones. I'm keen to see those narratives and how they fly as far as that group is concerned. Also keen to see if Algeria win the group. If Algeria finish second, then it means they will face the winner of Group E. So those are interesting, you know, undertones and interesting dynamics to watch out for.
Thank you so much for your time, Tosi. I'm going to let you run now. Sent me a message earlier that you have to run. Thank you so much for taking our time to join this chat. 5 minutes away from wrapping things up, and we have to wrap it up pretty quickly. Tolu, let's talk about the North Africans. Should they be bothered? Only Morocco won. Egypt, not so so. Algeria, not so so. Draws. They did lose, but they're not really there yet. At least they used to be the major, teams Africa always looks out for at this tournament. Morocco, definitely fresh from, almost fresh from the World Cup. Are you seeing the North Africans going as far? You predicted Algeria earlier, but you think they can come back from that draw against Angola? If yes, are you predicting that the future of this tournament is bright for African, North African teams? You have 2 minutes.
Yeah, thank you so very much. So the truth is, I wouldn't just want to make this judgment, this first say, based on the first round. But if I have anything to go by, I like the fact that football in Africa is actually evolving. So take, for instance, one of the countries I have also been paying attention to, not at the AFCON, is Comoros. They play well, play good football, but they're not here, unfortunately. So the thing is, if the North Americans don't evolve, they used to have the football, they used to have the game plan, but of course, it's evident from the first round, Mo Salah is not finding that mojo he used to find at Merseyside. He's not finding it with the Egyptian team. He's not playing with that happiness. And most of the balls, I was so shocked when I watched the game yesterday, up until the point where he actually got injury. He had about 3 misplaced passes. He wasn't. No, this is not the Mo Salah that plays for Liverpool. And then if you look at the star-studded Algerian side, and you're like, wow, so much is being expected of this team. And Morocco, of course. Morocco, I think, they were actually playing well. And when the Tanzanians had the red card, they upped their game. So it's a case wherein they really want to work. The Northern American teams has always been like the most technical part of this, in quotes, of the continent. But if you now look at what they're actually coming with based on the first round games, I don't think the trophy will be going now towards that region. It's most likely comes back maybe to the west, or probably to the south, to the southern African part of the continent. So I've not been impressed with the few times I've watched, but I still think fine. It's too early to make this assertion. Many a times the Northern American sides, they grow into the tournament as it keeps going. They are ready to take their game to anybody. Can you play to your own strength, or can you capitulate on their own weakness? So far, so good. It's not been quite impressive, but I would never say never. I'll still be rooting for them.
Still rooting for them. You know them. He's probably talking. Of course, he said it earlier. And let me help him again. Algeria. On my way. Final submissions. Which teams are you looking forward to in round 2? You have 1 minute, just 1 minute left. On my way.
Looking forward to my darling Nigeria doing the business. You know, Nigeria is a good one. They got a budget, so we are forging ahead. a few of the West Africa, Senegal included. Then Morocco. One of the Guineans, then Mali. I expect Mali to go far too. I think I left them out of my team for the semi-finals, but I almost that escaped my mind. I expect them to go far. Ultimately, one thing I realized with AFCON is that only the treble that Egypt won made it so that the best African team won on the day. Sometimes with AFCON, it's just, you need luck. Sometimes you can have the perfect team, but you also need luck. So may the best team win. Hopefully Nigeria wins AFCON. And if they don't again, we all come back to come around again. Thank you very much, Patrick.
Thank you so much. On my way, this is where we rounded up on the 90 Minutes Plus podcast. I've had Tolu Lopia Luko, I've had Awe Adedeji, and I've had Tosin Holmes. You can follow them on Twitter. If you just jumped into the podcast and you just got here, bam, go back. You'll find their Twitter handles there. You will definitely get quality football stuff from them. Also, follow the brand on Twitter, the 90 Minutes Plus, THE90MINSPLUS. We have a weekly conversation on Twitter. Is called 90 Minutes Plus Twitter Space every Saturday morning, 9:30 a.m. West African time. You find us there for an hour or two, dissecting things that happen in the world of football and predicting the things to come in the world of football. Give it a follow, give it a 5-star review, drop a kind comment, and let somebody know that this is one of the football podcasts they should be adding to their playlist. Thank you so much. I've been your host. Follow me on Twitter also, PAPI_TheGreat. Until we come your way next round, summary, preview, review of the Africa Cup of Nations. Stay safe. Make the most use of your time. Life is short. Life is also long. So be wise with how you spend it. We'll catch you in the next episode. Cheers, my friends.